Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 90th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using Edu All-Stars hashtag. We love seeing those conversations and hearing those things as the conversation flows through.
And we are so excited about this week's guest. We have Alice Keeler, who is a passionate educator in California, looking to change the way education works and the way professional development is delivered. She runs a really popular blog and is also an adjunct professor at CSU Fresno. So thank you, Alice, for being on with us today.
Yeah, thanks. I'm super excited.
Well, Alice, the best place we always like to start is just kind of hearing a little bit about you and how you ended up in education.
Oh, see, now that's a super funny story because I vowed not to teach. when I started college, I told my college counselor I wanted to graduate with as little math as humanly possible, and they said, no problem, you don't need to take any math classes. 3 weeks later, I changed my major to math, so that didn't really work out for me. And then I took an intro to teaching class at Fresno State, and I'm like, this is dumb, I don't want to do this. And I thought, you had to promise the teacher I would never teach in order to pass this class. Like, that's fine. I'm going to be an actuary, so I'm studying to be statistics nerd. And so when I graduated, I got a job at a bank. And after my first day of working at a bank, I got a phone call from Clovis High School, where I graduated from, and said, hey, Alice, could you come in for a job interview tomorrow? Would you mind filling out an application? I thought, part-time, minimum wage, full-time with benefits. Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm going to do that. So that's how I got... That's how I got into teaching. The Lord has a very twisted sense of humor. Don't say don't, because that's exactly what you're going to do. Yep. But, you know, I just really have found a passion for it. So when I started teaching, I actually started teaching at the high school I graduated from, and the kids who were freshmen when I graduated were now seniors. And I just look kind of young as it is. I'm 38. So you can imagine how that whole scene went down. And they gave me the lowest of the low kids to teach math. Like, I didn't even know that kids couldn't multiply at high school. And so, so I remember my first week, they turned in their homework, and I'm like, you know, because I'm an overachiever, so I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, I'm just going to give them a zero, because that'll really teach them. And that had the exact opposite effect, of course. And so that was really eye-opening for me that, you know, I thought the students would react one way, and they actually reacted in a completely different way to the types of feedback. And so, since I've always taught basically freshman algebra or basic math, I've taught kids who are traditionally just not successful at school, and they hate it. The first day they walk into math class, kids hate you. Like, just before they've even seen you, they hate you. And so there's your challenge, is how do you get them excited and passionate about learning when, you know, their love of math has been squashed. I mean, their self-esteem and their feeling like they can be successful. They have very low self-efficacy. So I just think every year of my whole career has been just innovating, just trying to, like, how can I reach these kids? How can I make them excited about this? How can I help them to feel good and that they're smart? So I'm just always trying crazy, wacky new things. And so I'm talking too much probably. My pivotal moment is when I had a kid teaching freshman algebra, and he comes to me and he's just so excited. He's like, Keeler, I did my homework. What's my grade? And I'm like, dude, you haven't done homework all year and you failed every test. So, you know, and he goes from being super excited to being completely dejected. And that's when I realized that grades just don't work for a lot. I mean, even kids who are higher-end kids, we accept grades as feedback, but the reality is that there's a lot better ways to motivate kids and give them feedback. So what we tell the kids is, well, you have an F, and if you do some more work, you'll have an F, and if you do even more work, probably, yeah, still an F, but maybe, just maybe, I will give you a D. And it's like, no wonder they give up, and are just like, I'm going to do summer school in the corner making trouble. So what I could have said to him was, okay, this is 10 points. That gets you, like, you're level 5. You're so close to level 6. Let's see, like, you just need to, like, you need 20 more points to get there. Let's see what you could do to do this. I could have gotten that kid to do work, and we could have incrementally done short-term goal setting to get him to pass the class. But instead, he gave up and just decided he was going to take summer school. So that really has fueled a lot of my passion towards gamification. And so that's what I study for my doctorate and for my dissertation. That's pretty much exactly what I want to do, is to add levels to the progress report. So kids start at level one and then they level up to level two and three, so that parents, students, and teachers can engage in short-term goal setting, and lots of research to show the benefits of that, that you want to set a bunch of short-term goals to reach a long-term goal. So I'm hopeful that adding that to the progress report will help a lot of kids to be more successful. So there's long answer to a short question.
Excellent. So you share constantly on your blog great ideas and such, and especially a lot of tech tips and like Excel workarounds and those kinds of things. When did you become like a data nerd?
Okay, that's a great question. So I became a math major. I stayed back in the fourth grade because I couldn't do math. My brother did all my algebra homework for me. It was too hard. So this is not something I'm naturally gifted at. But anyway, I changed my major to math, and I just worked super hard at it. And at a certain point, I decided I was going to be an actuary, so I'm taking all these statistics classes at Fresno State. And then my friends are like, Alice, let's take business statistics. It'll be an easy A. And I'm like, I'm not really interested in easy A, but, you guys are doing it, I'll do it with you. I mean, the class was a total joke. He would write all the formulas on the board. It was so simple, considering that I've already taken advanced stats a lot of times. But he did the whole class. We did it in Excel. So I learned how to do formulas, like how to take the middle section out of a number and some other things. I'm like, this is really awesome. And so when I started, when I was teaching at Clovis High School and started teaching there, one of the teachers who had set up this access database for running detention, he had gone to a new charter school in the district. And so I picked up his job doing detention. So I'm looking at his really cool database. I'm like, this is pretty awesome because it makes all these reports and things. So I got this really giant book on access. And I'm like, I can't understand this. So I ended up having to take a class. And then I got a couple of books on Excel. And I just started reading it. So then I would wander around campus and like, so what are you doing? That looks really inefficient. I think we could write a spreadsheet for that or a database. And I just would nerd it out, and everyone was so excited. I think to this day, I haven't taught there for 5 years. I think to this day, my old high school still uses my products, the database and things I made.
That's funny. So, but when did you choose or decide to get connected using social media?
That's another good question. So at the Q conference, maybe 5 years ago, I was going to a session by Mark Wagner on how to grow your PLN or something about your PLN, and pretty much wanted to learn that. Like, I wanted a hole in my head. But I wanted to see Mark Wagner. I heard he was pretty cool. And he spent the whole time talking about Twitter, and I'm like, you have to be kidding me. Like, Twitter is your whole PLN? I'm like, all right, so I'm going to try this out. So I set up a Twitter account and started tweeting at the Q conference. And so at that particular conference, I'm in the keynote. And there's hundreds of people in this keynote, and I'm tweeting during the keynote, and then other people are tweeting, and I'm interacting with them while we're doing the keynote, and it just really enriched the experience. And that I made some personal connections just through sitting, like Ken Shelton. He and I are good friends now, but at the time I had never met him. Do you know Ken Shelton?
I know the name.
He's pretty cool. So he works and does the trying to turn off my microphone. Like the iOS summits with the EdTech team. But anyway, so he was tweeting, and so he and I got started in a conversation, and that's how I got to meet him. And we've done some fun collaboration and different things that has really turned out to be a really positive addition to my PLN. So from that, it's just has steamrolled for me to be a great way to connect with educators and find cool ideas. I also troll Twitter to see what like issues people have so that I can write spreadsheets for them.
How can we motivate teachers to inspire change in their classroom? Basically, getting away from the status quo.
Oh, that's a great question. How do you inspire them? It really kind of depends on where they are in the curve of being ready. But a lot of times, just showing them something that other kids are doing that just really just blows their mind away can really make a huge impact. I have a friend down south. He has, at his school, the fourth graders, I think, are doing a collaborative project with fourth graders in Finland. And so when I started they're co-designing a bakery together. Like, the time zones are completely off. Of course, the language is different, the money is different. And so when you start really sharing, showing Mystery Skype, have you seen Scott Bedley's, he did a, with Microsoft, they did a little promo for Mystery Skype, showing people this Mystery Skype commercial or something where someone's just doing something that really they had not even thought of is a great way to kick them into the, like, oh, well, maybe I could try something. So I like to kind of start big that way and then give them an idea of maybe you could try this.
Right.
And that usually is fairly effective.
So the one thing I hear from a lot of teachers is, and thinking about what you do and how often you're on social media, how often you're blogging and doing things like that, a lot of people say they don't have time or they can't make it work. How do you make it work in your hectic schedule?
I don't sleep. I do sleep. You know, it's just something that I really value. I really value sharing and connecting with others. And, you know, I really started blogging for myself. Like, I'd write it out because I would reference back to my own blog posts all the time. So it is a thing for me to remind myself how to do something. But I get a lot of positive feedback from people that they use it and they like it, so it encourages me to do more. But when you start blogging and you're reflecting on your practices, you get so much more out of it than, obviously, if you don't. I mean, you know, you kind of think about it like, oh, this is how that went, or this is what worked well. But it's not until you really write it down for an outside audience that you get that moment of what you want to do next. And so I just value it. That's just, I say that that's my thing. That's what I do. That is my job. And then the things that I get paid for, the things that fuel my blog. But, I mean, it's, you do what you value. So if you value it, then you'll find time to do it. I get up at 4 a.m., so to be fair, I have 5 kids, so, you know, they're still asleep. But that's a good time to get started and write some blog posts and reflect on your day. Something that I just really, really think is important for teachers to do is have a really well-organized classroom website. And I term that a digital haversack, because I was, like, under a time crunch to come up with a title for a session at a workshop, and now I'm just, like, rolling with it. But anyway, so the difference between a classroom website and a digital haversack, a classroom website is where information goes to die. Like, you put your syllabus on there, and you've got your about me, and you set it up at the beginning of the year, and then you never touch it again. When people go to your website and they see it, and they go a second time, and it's the same thing, they're not going to go back a third time. And so you have to keep your website updated. If you want parents and students to get something out of what you're doing, you got to provide value for them every time they see it. So I also feel like we spoon feed kids too much. I teach teachers right now at Fresno State University, and I'll give them some directions, and I'm fairly vague, and they just have a hard time coping because their teachers have always told them exactly what to do and exactly how to do it. And you don't create 21st century learners who are creative and do critical thinking when you give them cookie cutter directions. So it's a process for them to learn that their opinion matters and their ideas get to shape and influence what the project actually ends up looking like. So, but what I do, and this is great for student differentiation, is I put all the directions on a blog page so that that day's lesson is at the top and the previous day's lesson is below that and the previous day's lesson is below that, and I don't give directions. The directions are all on the website, and I expect kids to start the agenda. They walk in the door, they get started. There is no downtime in my class, none. They will work the whole time. And I will, and I have plenty of things for them to do, and I have choices. Like, you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this. I was just reading some research, because I'm getting my doctorate, so that's what I do, on giving choices and that locus of control, how important that is for motivation. But also, teaching math, especially, I have such wide ability areas. If I can give kids different points of entry and different things they can do, I can't speak all those directions. So by having a really well-organized website, I'm able to give kids choices, I'm able to differentiate for them, and I'm able to back off and let kids to be more independent and to teach them that. So when I went on maternity leave, I left my sub directions as alicekeeler.net. That was it. No joke. That's all I wrote down on the paper. And I teach freshman algebra, so, these are squirrely boys. And you know what? The kids came in, they sat down, they went to the agenda, they had things to do. My sub wrote up no referrals. She did not have any behavior problems because the kids knew what to do and they had options that were challenging at their level. So I'm a big advocate of that.
That's awesome.
If you could pick like a tech tool that you're currently really like enjoying and you really like talking about, what would that be?
I'm obsessed with Google Classroom right now. You might have noticed. but the other day, I wrote for my CI100 students, which are elementary school wannabe elementary school teachers. They're not teaching yet. A main assignment for them to create. They're working in groups of three, and it was what we call virtual class, so they weren't meeting with me physically. They had to create a Google document, share it with each other. They had to create a table and three columns, and they had to do activity, DOK level, and learning objective. And then they had to fill out this table, and they had to do some of the things on the document, and then they had to share it with me. So I'm not with them, but then I start seeing in my email, you know, week six notes, you know, been shared with you. And so I open them up, and I see my students, they're in the document, and I'm inserting comments about their learning objectives. Like, one group, I'm like, did you even read what the directions were? Like, verb, starts with a verb. No, don't know what a verb is. Okay. They were just awful. And so I'm just inserting comments, telling them some suggestions of how to do it, and, you know, giving the definition. And then they're editing it on the spot as I'm inserting comments. So while I'm doing this, they go from just being, like, completely confused to, like, bingo, you got it! I think that might be my high for a year. I'm just so excited about this. And then just a little bit ago, I went into Google Classroom. I teach a graduate course. So my students are writing research papers on educational technology, and I was copying and pasting, but most of them haven't started it yet, so I was copying and pasting the template for APA that somebody posted on Twitter just a few minutes ago, so I'm like, oh, that'll be helpful. So anyone who hasn't started, I pasted it in there, and one girl, she had already started her paper, and I started inserting comments, even though it's not due for several weeks. She happens to join the document while I'm doing it, and then she starts making her edits right, and, you know, with my corrections right there, and we'll start going back and forth. And I just love that moment where you're actually teaching, but you're not there. I mean, even when you're there, you can't do that. When you're a person, it's just got to be the most powerful teaching moment ever. I'm just like, ah! So that's what I'm like super excited about this week, is how easy I'm able to get into students' documents while it's assigned and give them feedback. Like, I just feel so motivated to do this.
So, Alice, thinking about all this motivation, who inspired you the most to be the person you are today?
I had a really crazy history teacher in high school. You know, we didn't have tests. We did everything with simulations and essays, and he was just crazy and wacky, and I think that that's taken me a long way. And then when I started teaching, he actually ended up being my learning director. And I remember very specifically one time he said, Alice, how do the students like use this stuff in real life? And I'm like, I don't know, I have a math degree, they don't teach us that. And I'm like offended, I'm like, what do you mean I'm supposed to teach them how to use it in real life? But you know, there's a lot of times somebody says something to you and you're just like, what is wrong with you? But then, you know, you let it stew for a while, and you're like, yeah, but I should be thinking about that. So just things like that. So Dr. Bushman.
Cool. What's something you're reading right now, maybe education-related or otherwise?
Well, you know, I'm getting my doctorate, so I get to read Advanced Statistics and Research.
Yeah,
and, you know, I'm just going to say, I know this sounds super stupid, but Larry Hatcher has a magical ability to turn what could possibly be the hardest material in the whole world into something that is entertaining and enjoyable to read. So if you want to read a stats book, this is the one to do. But awesome. Hands down, the real answer is To Teach Like a Pirate by Dave Burgess.
Love that book.
Yeah, so I this semester, my teaching partner Libby Miller and I have made that a required text, and we started the class off by having the students read it, and it has made all the difference in the world in their attitudes and their excitement and passion for teaching. I just can't even tell you how grateful I am for Dave Burgess's Teach Like a Pirate book.
I couldn't agree more. I absolutely love that book.
And he's grateful to you for making it required reading for your class.
He's going to guest speak tomorrow with my students, so they're just going to be over the moon. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's very
cool. So, Alice, when you're having one of those really rough days or moments, what do you do to kind of recenter yourself?
I really like to blog, and I go on Twitter. If I'm having a really rough day, I need to take a nap. But I like to blog. I have a blogging addiction.
What's one of those?
A little bit. I have 660 blog posts.
Yeah, that's a little bit of an addiction.
Just a little.
That's only two a day per year.
So. Sometimes.
What's the biggest thing? What's one of the biggest things you've learned over the last year that maybe has made an impact in who you are?
Biggest things I've learned over the last year. I don't know. I'm constantly learning new things. I like to learn stuff. I'm going to go with Minecraft. I took a class with Chris Haskell this semester, Virtual Worlds from Boise State. And my kids love Minecraft. Like, they are so passionate about it. My son is the world's shyest kid. He won't check out a library book because he'd have to talk to the librarian. Like, he's so shy. But his teacher let him do Minecraft for instead of making a poster of the planets, she let him recreate the planets in Minecraft. And he presented it to his class. And then I gave a keynote a few weeks ago, and I asked him if he would, in front of 200 people, demonstrate Minecraft, and he did. But afterwards, he wouldn't talk to anybody. So I just, I see how awesome it is for kids. But I took this class. I mean, I already was into it, right? I get this. I buy into Minecraft and Second Life and virtual worlds. I mean, my doctorate is an emphasis in games and simulation. But when I really got to see the projects that my classmates were making using Minecraft and Second Life, I need to get a copies of all these activities. It's just mind-blowing. And to really think of how school could be really interactive and constructivist and where kids are hands-on making things, that technology and that ability is here now that we just – need to get that into the. We need to get this in schools and value that. It even though I already was into it, I mean, it just took me up 20 levels.
Right. Cool.
What do you see as the biggest challenge in your current position?
I think my biggest challenge is that I don't have a job. So I'm here in my nerd cave, and my room is right on the other side of this wall, so I can just go take a nap. When I say I don't have a job, I have like 15 jobs. But I had some complications with my last pregnancy. Like I said, I have 5 kids. So fortunately, I had to leave the classroom. And so now I'm teaching at Fresno State University, and I do the Being in the Classroom lesson of the day every day for grades 9 through 12, and then I just do speaking, consulting, traveling, and blogging, and I have a lot of side jobs, and I'm getting my doctorate. So trying to do time management,
wow.
I think, is my biggest challenge.
I can imagine how that would be. Wow.
If you could kind of go back to yourself as a first-year teacher, what advice would you give yourself?
I'd slap myself. You know what? Actually, that's not true. I would not slap myself, and I tell these to my teachers that I'm teaching right now, is you can't beat yourself up. The only reason to beat yourself up is because you're not willing to learn and move on and learn from your mistakes. You gotta, it's a journey, and you have to learn for yourself. And I know a lot of them, as I'm teaching them these things that I want them to know, are just like, "You're so dumb, Keeler. No, I'm not doing that." Like, not only can I see it in their face, they'll tell me to my face that this is ridiculous, and the kids just need to sit down, and they need to behave themselves, and they need to, you know, kids should, da-da-da-da. And I just, you know, smile. I'm like, we'll see. We'll just see what it's like when you start teaching, and, you know, you just, you learn and you evolve. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say that that's okay, that you know, I'll never have a perfect lesson. And right. I think 5 years from now, I want to reach back and smack myself now. But I'm always growing. And reflecting and talking with other people and learning what other people are doing and coming up with new things. And so to say that I should have done this back then when I didn't know about it, I can't. I want to give people permission to that it's okay where they're at.
Right.
But giving grades would be my answer, as I would stop doing that.
Well, Alice, one of the questions that we always like to end on with our guests is, what is something right now that you are really passionate about?
I am really passionate about not calling kids failures and getting rid of grades. I don't think grades are motivating. People say they are, but I can make some arguments against that, and there's some research to show that we accept grades as poor excuse for feedback. But I feel like, you know, we abuse kids with math. We make up the number of points that assignments are worth. We make up the categories on our rubric. We make all those points up. If I made an assignment worth 10 points or 100 points, where did you get that from? You made that up. When you create questions for a test or a quiz, how do you know those questions are statistically valid and that they're not biased? They are biased. Mm-hmm. And then we take all of these points and we average them like that. That averaging is not meaningful towards reflecting what a kid knows. And so we have all these things we make up, and then we're like, sucks to be you. You're half a point off from getting an A, and too bad. And it's, you know, it's not me. It's the grade book, and it puts this separation between the relationship of the teacher and the student. And I just that makes me sad. It makes me sad that we don't we let kids be numbers rather than human beings. So I'm really passionate about trying to have a more holistic approach to assessment and more gamification, ways to make it more motivating and to consider that each kid is an individual and that we should treat them like that.
Excellent. Alice, thanks for taking some time this evening to talk with us. How can listeners connect with you?
I am at Alice Keeler on Twitter, and I'm on there all the time. And then alicekeeler.com is my blog. And I have a Chrome extension, alicekeeler.com/Chrome, if you want to keep up with my blog.
And you can connect with us at EduAllStars HQ or use the website eduallstars.com. And you can also search us out on iTunes, EduAllStars with no spaces, and find the previous 89 episodes.
And we hope you join us for our next interview as we interview John Spencer. Thanks again, Alice. We really appreciate your time today.